the OTB Podcast Network.
OTB Gold, the very best of Off the Ball.
Are you crazy?
This is OTB Sports Radio.
Are you a complete rookie? What are you talking about? Are you out of your mind? Are you crazy?
Absolutely brilliant manoeuvre by Mansell. Fantastically brilliant.
Yeah, it's been a hell of a life and a career, yeah. Thank you for giving me this platform to announce my retirement.
Wexford lead 2:13 to 2:8.
The treatment was tough. You were given every encouragement and every chance to survive.
When I was 13, 14, I was playing on about 13, 14 teams at the time.
OTB Gold, the very best of Off the Ball. Weekdays from 1 p.m. and 6 p.m.
OTB Sports Radio, live 24/7 on the Go Loud app.
Football on Off the Ball.
With Paddy Power, as obnoxiously passionate about soccer as Frank Lampard after the final whistle. Gamble responsibly. See Dunlewy.net.
Welcome back to Off the Ball Saturday on News Talk. John Duggan with you through till 5 o'clock in the company of the former Republic of Ireland captain David Myler, the football correspondent of the Irish Independent Dan McDonald, and the broadcaster and the journalist Johnny Ward. Remember, our football coverage brought to you with thanks to Paddy Power. For more information on responsible gambling, visit Dunlewy.net. You can text us on 53106 about the beautiful game. Tweet us at Off the Ball. You can watch us as well on the social channels for Periscope, at Off the Ball on Twitter, on YouTube, on Facebook, and on the new OTB Sports app for iOS and Android. Search OTB Sports in your App Store to download that now. I think we're going to start, David, with Lionel Messi, the big story of the week. He wants to leave Barcelona. The bureau facts went in. Quite sad for Brady, I think. A marvellous odyssey over 20 years for Lionel Messi, if he does leave, if there's not politics at play here. David, should Manchester City put all the stops to sign him? I think it'd be amazing to see Lionel Messi in the Premier League.
No, I agree. I think we'd all love to see, you know, Lionel Messi play week in, week out in the Premier League. It's always been this thing has been thrown at him with Cristiano, obviously playing in Portugal, England, Spain, and now in Italy, that can Messi play in, you know, a different league? Of course he can play. He's one of the greatest footballers ever played the game. And I think if he did come to the Premier League, it would be huge. Like, you're talking about Man City throwing out of the stops. They will have to. I do personally think it's a bit of mind games over there. I think with the fact that Koeman had the conversation with Suarez, I think that's annoyed him. Obviously, they're very close friends. And I think he's just had enough of the president, Bartomeu, I think, if that's how you pronounce it. So I do think he'll stay there. I don't think he'll move.
Good afternoon, lads. What do you make of it all? Fred, we've just got an issue there with the line, David. David, just on that, nearly $1 billion spent on transfers by Bartomeu, a wage bill of half that, five sporting directors under him. We have, like, Valverde, Setien, these managers going through the revolving door. Ronald Koeman, a club hero, has been brought in now. A shortfall in the books of around 200 million. If they get Messi off the books, they'll wipe that because they're never going to sell anybody like that again for that amount. So in a way, it does make sense for Barcelona, but he'd be probably writing his own death warrant, to quote the Michael Collins.
Yeah, I can't see it. A club like Barcelona has always had this tradition. I know they're talking about the club is going through a transitional period and Messi. Yes, I do agree that Messi is in the last few years to be able to dominate Europe. And is he willing to stick around for them to rebuild? I think Koeman has a big job. I think he's unfortunate with the way he's come in, you know, with the COVID circumstances and the transfers. It's going to be difficult. But there's just something inside me that can't see Lionel Messi wearing, like, a Manchester City jersey or a PSG jersey, even a Liverpool jersey. I don't know. It's just something unique and special. A lot of these other players have, you know, played with different clubs. Like, the example I'll use is Ronaldo. He played with Sporting. He went to Manchester United. It wasn't, you know, you were kind of familiar with him moving. But Messi is Barcelona, you know. He will go down as the greatest player. He'll probably have a statue built once he retires, the whole lot. I don't know. It's one of those. And, you know, Bartomeu wants, he kind of wants to run it his way by the looks of it. But they're talk, like, I've been Google translating so much Spanish because obviously I don't speak it to try and understand where it's at. But they're talking about, they're trying to bring the elections forward, because if they do that, then Bartomeu will be pushed out. It's a fascinating story. Look, even the smallest thing of Messi became the most Googled, I don't know what to put it, search of all time when he obviously sent in the facts, and then the Twitter mentions went through the roof. It's just, it's created global news, really.
let's knock COVID off it, David. And also, Guardiola, is he the man, though, maybe to persuade Messi to go to Manchester?
Definitely. I think, look, obviously Messi made his debut under Rijkaard, but it was really Guardiola who nurtured him and brought him through and created him into the player he is. Obviously, he's naturally gifted, but he pushed him on a couple of levels. I don't know if you saw recently Leroy Sané was speaking, saying how much, Guardiola like reformed him and kind of almost made him into a better player. Like, I think if he is the goal, it's that familiar blanket of, I know the manager, himself and Aguero are very good friends. I believe Messi's godfather to Aguero's son, stuff like that. So that's a huge pull. They have, Rodri as well. They have Otamendi. Do you know what I mean? He's got a lot of Spanish-speaking, people around the club, like even the Brazilians who were there, Ederson, Fernandinho, etc. There's a big kind of pull for him to go there. It's just whether or not he wants that. A lot of people have said he's done this in the past for a new contract. Like, it's been all over Twitter and the internet, and you guys have been covering it about like his contract and the wages. I don't think it's about money when you get to that level. Like, if he is on $1 million a week, give or take, like, it's not going to make a difference to him to, squeeze out an extra few pounds, because it's not going to change his life. So I think he is just fed up of the hierarchy. You've seen the argument with Abidal. Abidal is now gone. I know he got the backing of the board and whatever, but he stepped down because I really think with a player that big, I'm not going to say he's bigger than Barcelona, but he's bigger than Bartomeu. So, like, he's playing Russian roulette. It's either me or you. And I think Bartomeu will probably eventually step aside because he won't want to be remembered as the fella who sold Lionel Messi.
Absolutely. Johnny, Dan, I think we have you there now.
Yeah, we're here, John, I think.
Yeah, Lionel Messi, take it away.
Well, no, I was listening to your chat there. I mean, I think David's analysis of it, I pretty much agree with. Like, it's not really about a money thing. I think Messi's probably at the stage where it's probably a legacy thing to some degree. I think, he's at the stage where a lot of that stuff is going to, like, guide his decision-making at this time of his life, He doesn't need, like, that sort of cash grab, It's not, he doesn't need to. I think his wages are pretty substantial as it is. And I think we spoke about this a couple of weeks back. And to be honest, didn't think for one second probably that he would end up leaving. Surprised by the development, because I actually thought that part of the legacy would be in that sort of one club man thing, which had a certain magic aspect to that. And it's such a different sort of football culture to some degree that it is tied up with this presidential election aspect, and people who work that beat and know it well. And as David alluded to there, the difficulties behind the scenes, with Abidal and his frustrations that maybe just the frustration with, losing that game so badly just drove him over the edge. And this is like, this is sort of renegade tactics. And he does have the power, because of course he has the power, because I mean, exactly, like, who wants to be the person who's remembered for losing Messi, who then, I mean, even if we think that maybe he might be slightly diminished, like, 80 or 90% maybe of what he was, like, that 80, 90% is still going to go to another very good club in Europe, you would think. Like, I don't think he's going to be going the China MLS route or something at this stage. So, like, he's going to go somewhere very good in Europe and probably hurt you to some degree. So who wants to stand over that?
Johnny, I got a text in here. Messi to lead the Toon Army, a new takeover twist. From Bernie G, a Barmy magpie fan hiking up in the Neffin Mountain. Fresh mayo air will make you believe in anything. Great show, lads.
Yeah, you can just imagine Messi and Mike Ashley arguing over what his contract should be a bit of crack. But I think something that should be mentioned, Messi's played over 600 games at this stage of his life. And he's, like, as Dan alluded to there, he can't be the player he was at this stage. He's 33. I would say it's taken a bit of a toll on its body, how, energetic he is in games and how he'll have to evolve. The Bayern game was obviously it must have been an absolute shock to the system. And he's looking around for players to pass it to, and the players that used to be there just aren't there anymore, some of whom have left. And one of them was Puyol. And Puyol was, I think Puyol's tweet was quite pointed in terms of players coming out and backing Messi against the regime. So whether he's calling their bluff or whether he does actually fancy a new challenge at this stage, I don't know. I think he's probably such a Barcelona icon and legend, as David said, he basically is Barcelona and there will be a statue to him. I'd imagine he would kind of like a Steven Gerrard and be a one-club player. And I think that's probably what will happen. But I have to say, like, if he did come to the Premier League, and the Premier League is amazingly starting very shortly, it would be unbelievable for the drama of it. And you'd imagine Man City's ratings would go absolutely through the roof because he would just add so much to it. But if I were a betting man, I'd say he'd probably stay at Barca. But I don't think he's going to be the player he was.
Yeah, David, if he did go to the Premier League, and it's funny, like if the Newcastle Saudi thing had happened, they probably would have been the front runners given the unlimited funds they have. But it's funny, like you would have seen players like Ronaldo. Real Madrid was always possibly the end game for him after Manchester United. If Messi did end up in the Premier League, it would re-establish the Premier League, which I think anyway is the global league, really as a place to be.
Yeah, no, I definitely think the Premier League is the biggest league in the world. It's watched in the most countries and all that. But it almost seems as if there's this pull towards Real Madrid and Barcelona. You know, that's kind of like if you look at any big player who's played for Manchester United, Man City, Liverpool, Arsenal, they all kind of want to go to Madrid or Barcelona. They, you know, they tend to have. It would be incredible look for the Premier League if he came across. Like we've all probably done in our fair share, unless you're Man City supporter, we take the mick out of them because they don't sell out. They will sell out there, you know, stadium in minutes, you know, when it obviously reopens or whatever. You know, the global traction towards Manchester City will go through the roof. I think that would be a big thing, you know, in the conversations behind the scenes at Man City would be like, he will transform that club to make it global. And then, like, I probably agree with Johnny, he's probably only, probably 90-95% of the player he was. Of course, old age probably does kick in, but can you just imagine him slotting into a Manchester City team that played last year, albeit they were shaky at the back, but going forward, like, he would transform that attack. Like,
would he do it easily, David, slot into that team?
Oh, 100%. You look at his record in the Champions League against English sides, it's phenomenal. And to think, like, you know, there's always been that joke, can he do it in a cold Tuesday night at Stoke? Of course he can. Do you know what I mean? I think I've done it in a cold Tuesday night at Stoke where we've beaten Stoke. If I can do it, Lionel Messi can do it. You know,
the fact that Inter Milan has been mentioned is quite fascinating. Like, I have a bit of a soft spot for Italian football, and there has been a bit of a revival in Italian football. The Ronaldo procurement would have really brought on, you know, the kind of interest in Italian football, and it'd be a massive statement signing from Inter if he were to go there. And I think Italian football would probably need it more than the Premier League at this stage, but it does seem to be a potential candidate.
Lads, Messi's nailed on for City. They've been actively courting him for years. They could easily afford the fee of around 200 million with financial fair play implications. They've got Pepe and Bigger Stain. Friends like Aguero. Banker to happen, that is from Killian in River Stick. Ooh, yeah, like, to me, with the Messi thing, lads, it's that he's 33 years of age. He's got one bullet in the barrel on the World Cup in Qatar. He probably wants to finish and win a Champions League. He's obsessed with winning it. Maybe Barcelona is just too much of a rebuilding job for Koeman and the president, and then it's another year's time. And maybe it's just PSG or Man City or Inter. But probably there's not many clubs that can really afford him. That's the thing. But this is maybe a chance for Barcelona and a chance for Messi to make a fresh start, as sad as it is, because it is going to be very sad.
I think that's a fair point as well about Barca, because just judging on the way they've ended the season, Messi could well be looking at it and saying, like, this is not a job that can be basically sorted in the space of a transfer window. It looks deeper than that. And as you say, with his age, maybe he will say, well, do I waste like 2 years of my life hoping that Barca reach the level that they were before, when clearly they're miles off Bayern Munich based on that performance? And he might well say, well, listen, I don't have this time, and it's just time to move on.
It's sort of hard to believe, though, that if Messi did join Man City, well, I know that there's actually trials going on in the UK at the moment, but they actually could have this closed doors game, like for his first match, what would be like one of the sort of great Premier League occasions. I think we'd have a couple of suspicious looking ball boys, I think, from Man City.
Older than normal.
A couple of people from Man City's tunnel club might suddenly find themselves like... You know, that person looks to have a sort of a Dubai aspect to them. They're running to get that ball behind the goals, you know.
Or dressed up as a seat.
Yeah. I think there's going to be can you just imagine, you know? I think the applications of ex-pros and pundits and everyone coming out of the woodwork to offer their services for that game would be pretty spectacular, I'd say, as well.
David, have you? I don't think you played against him yourself, but
no.
But have you spoken to players that have?
Yeah, look, the most asked question I get is who's the best player you've played against. That's Cristiano Ronaldo for me. You know, the lads will have probably covered the game when we got beaten 5-1 over New York. Ronaldo played an hour, I think it was before the 2014 World Cup. Like, you speak to lads who played against them, and they just, he's a genius. They said you just can't get near him. I often talk about when I say Ronaldo would be the best player I've played against, but the one I struggled the most against was someone like a David Silva. But then if you look at the type of David Silva, the way he is, Messi then is another level above. You know, similar builds. Like, Messi is obviously quicker than Silva. They're predominantly left-footed, but you just can't get near them. And, you know, everyone I've spoken to about it, it's just saying it's, you're almost taunting yourself going, wow, did he really do that? Like, that's how special of a player he is. Like,
is that stressful when you're on the pitch?
Oh, yeah, because there's only so much grabbing and kicking you can do. Like, you can only get away with so much. Like, and then if you're as stupid as I am and you get booked after 15, 20 minutes, you're kind of like, you know, you're coming off at half time or an hour because you can't affect the game.
Harry Maguire, David, you played with him. He's had a very difficult 10 days, an incident in Greece, a court case rushed through, a guilty verdict of repeated bodily harm, attempted bribery and violence against public employees. A verdict and a conviction that's been nullified now. There will be a retrial. I'd say you couldn't believe what you were seeing.
No. Like, look, I've known Harry probably 4 or 5 years now. And when it first came out, the first thing, like, I turned to my wife and I went, no chance. Like, the accusation against him that he said, like, I'm the captain of Manchester United, I'm rich. Like, that's not Harry. He's not that type of lad. I did tweet about it. All right, fair be it. A few people had a few things to say to me about, like, oh, you should get over and represent him in that. But it's not in Harry's makeup. Yes, I understand the circumstances. You're with your fiance. You know, you're with your brothers. You're with your sister. You know, obviously, the incident that which happened to his sister is never nice. Like, me and my pals that I've grown up, I've spoken about it. I'd have probably gone Lula, like, if that had happened to me. But, like, the thing is, Harry's not that, he's not a physical type. Do you know what I mean? I know enough lads who, if they were full to the brim, would have a cut off. People who would say things stupid, but Harry's not got that in him. I've been on many nights out with him. You know, there's been times where he's ended up in my house, you know, like, full, and he's been ever so polite to my wife the following morning, everything. He's just, it's not him. I had spoken to him a couple of days after he was released, and obviously he explained to me what he explained in the interview and whatever, and I believe him. A lot of other lads are like, fair enough, you think, like, yeah, they're probably lying. They probably were up to no good. But with Harry, he's not that type of guy. And, you know, obviously the court case was rushed through. His defence didn't have enough time to prepare, what have you. So it will be interesting once they get all the facts and evidence into the court for the next time that, you know, he does obviously clear his name.
Did you ever get hassle and bars yourself, David, because you were a footballer? Is somebody like Harry Maguire a target, you think, in a place like Greece or wherever it might be in the world? It doesn't matter if it's Greece or not.
Well, the thing Harry has, Harry is captain of one of the biggest clubs in the world. Manchester United would be one of the biggest supported clubs. You know, like, Greece is a renowned area for Irish, English to go, you know, for the summer. Obviously, with the countries getting ticked off because of COVID, Greece was a place that was open that you didn't have to quarantine after. So there was going to be a lot more English people there. I know you're asking me there about, like, I've had it over the years. I've had many an argument in Cork when I've been home. I've been in arguments in Dublin. A lot of time, fellas want to come up to you, they want to talk to you. Like, I speak on behalf of Harry and, you know, the character I have of him. I've made mistakes. I've said things to people, you know, that I said when I was young, I was immature. I was probably full to the brim of drink. Do you know what I mean? But I learned from those mistakes. I got older. Do you know, it does happen. Fellas want to come up to you and they want to talk to you. You know, they want to cut off you. You have to like my father used to say, don't put yourself in those situations. That was the big thing. But then again, you know, there's times when you want to, you know, if I come home to Cork, I go out with the lads I grew up with, the lads I went to school with. I want to go and enjoy a night out with them. I see them every, if they don't come to England, I see them every 3-4 months. But you might get a fella then who wants, you know, wants a cut off you because he just fancies it. But yet then you get victimized. Certainly like the type that, you know, when we speak of Harry, it gets blown out of proportion because he is then the captain of Manchester United. Now, this is obviously the accusations against him are serious. I'm not saying they're not, but there's been times when I've been home and I've gotten a lot of crap. Some, don't get me wrong, some you might bring on to yourself. But at the same time, it's how you deal with it. You know, if you are full to the brim of drink, you don't, like, people come up to you and they want to cut off you, but they don't know what's going on in your real life. You know, I had an incident a few years ago when I was at home. I came home on Freshers Week. Me and my wife had our third miscarriage in the space of 11 months. I wanted to go home. The club had given me time off. I wanted to let off steam, albeit I picked Freshers Week, which probably wasn't the best time to go out. But I remember I was sitting outside McDonald's and some fella just stuck a phone in my face and recorded me. And then he stuck it up on Facebook, you know, and my mother saw it, my father saw it, everyone in my family saw it, my wife saw it. It went more or less all around Ireland. But you know what I mean? That person at that time had no idea what was going on in my life. You know, me and my wife were going through a very difficult time, but this fella wanted to just stick a, you know, phone in my face and wanted to try and provoke me. You know, but it's part and parcel of it. You know, you can't get away from it. I put myself in that situation by going out. So, like, you even see with Harry in the interview on the BBC where, you know, your man says, well, you know, do you have any regrets or, you know, should you apologise? And he said, well, no, this is the life I want to live. You know, if you, like, should Harry have gone to Greece? Probably not. Yes, he was, you know, with his family, his mother and his father were there. Like I said, all his family, like, you kind of think that you can get away with it, but at times you can't because you're such a, well, certainly for Harry, you're such a high profile. I'm not, but like at the time I was back home where I would be a recognisable face.
Yeah. Okay. Well, David Myler, Dan McDonald, Johnny Ward, lots more football chat after the break. 53106 for your text messages, folks. Add Off The Ball on Twitter back after this. And you're welcome back to Off The Ball Saturday on News Talk. John Duggan with you 3 till 5 o'clock in the company of the former Republic of Ireland captain David Myler, the football correspondent of the Irish Independent Dan McDonald, and the broadcaster and journalist Johnny Ward. Remember, our football coverage brought to you with thanks to Paddy Power. For more information on responsible gambling, visit dunlewy.net. You can text us on 53106. You can tweet us at Off The Ball. We're streaming live as well now. You can watch us on the Off The Ball social channels for Periscope, on Twitter at Off The Ball, on YouTube, on Facebook, and on the new OTB Sports app for iOS and Android. Search OTB Sports in your app store. Text in here, Messi's been actually better for Barca than ever before. Different, slower, but instead of dribbling, it's his passing, especially his long-range passing, is better than Xavi. I'm not exaggerating. People just have not watched La Liga enough in the last few years. He won their last two league titles on his own. Well, obviously, Real Madrid won the most recent one. Matt Doherty to Spurs, folks. Looks like a done deal. Just a matter of just crossing the line. 17 million euro, effectively, just under that for a deal, which is pretty much done. Is it a good move, Dan?
I think so, yeah. Like, I know he obviously had a very good thing going on at Wolves, and there's always that debate, you know, about do you leave somewhere where you're happiest? And I'm sure, you know, David can come in at that at some stage. I mean, I suppose you look at someone like Seamus Coleman, maybe, who would have had opportunities, and, you know, will he at some stage in the future wish, you know, you might have taken that chance just to see, I guess. And, you know, it appears that Matt is probably going to do that. And, you know, we will see how it goes, you know. But, like, it's an incredible story, you know, for someone who, what, he's 29 his next birthday, you know, and spent, you know, a good portion of his early 20s probably pigeonholed to some degree as, like, a, you know, a championship player or being someone that's in that bracket. And now I think maybe the third most expensive Irish transfer of all time. He is going to a club that you call one of the big six clubs. You know, we talk about the dearth of Irish players at that level. And I mean, sometimes you strike when the iron is hot. I know a lot of people talking about the fee, and maybe it's lower than you would expect. I mean, sometimes there just can be reasons for that. He wouldn't have necessarily, from my understanding, have been like a really big earner till his last contract. And even then, I don't think he's necessarily sort of like madly financially like motivated. You know, I think his dad's been a very big influence on his life, and you know, he's really like, it's a great story, like how he's got to the level that he's now got to. You know, I just hope there's a clause in the deal where they can get a surname pronounced now right as well, now that he's going to a slightly higher level. But I think from his perspective, I'm sure it's worth having a pop. You know, I mean, like, you get to work with Jose Mourinho. I might have my opinions about how long Jose might be there. You know, he has the Mendes link. You know, there's all these reasons why these things happen. But like, why not give it a go? I mean, it's Spurs. It's something in years to come. If he didn't take it, I'm sure there might be a point in his life where Wolves wouldn't be as loyal to him. And you take that chance when it comes for you.
Hi, lads. I think Matt Doherty's a great signing, but I hope Jose doesn't stop his attacking flair. And if Spurs go one up, they keep pushing. That is some Damien and Tala. Johnny, Bohemians are going to do well out of this as well.
Yeah, I think Dan's more on top of the Bohemian situation. I know the talk is that they would get 10%.
Now, 10%. It's basically 10% of, I think it's 10% over and above whatever they got already, which was like, you know, it's sort of, I think it was 60 grand up front and a couple of appearance clauses. But yeah, they held on to their clause when others might have wanted it sold.
I think like that's, you know, some of the League of Ireland players that go to England, some of them work out, some of them don't. But I think like clauses like that should really be something that clubs look for, because like, make no mistake, this is a massive windfall for Bowes, and it's getting, Bowes have been one of the most prudently run clubs in Ireland. They're you know, as Keith Long said after the game in Hungary the other night, you know, their players train four nights a week. They're not really full time in the truest sense of the word, and you know, they probably don't pay ridiculous wages compared to some other clubs. And 1.5 million. The interesting thing now is the way Dundalk are basically blowing money over the last couple of years. The gap between Dundalk and Bowes, for example, is going to get quite narrow if they get that 1.5 million. And what Bowes do, because Bowes are a very unique club, they're really involved in the community. You know, there's an excellent piece in the Irish Times this week about the Bohemian Foundation and, you know, what they do in the community, and but how they'll invest the money would be intriguing, because as Dan's piece in the Indo today about Dundalk is, you can basically, a football club can kind of turn sour very quickly. But in terms of the move itself, like from a purely football perspective, I don't think it's a good move. I think, and I'd be slightly worried from an Irish perspective, because I wouldn't be surprised if his form, Doherty's very much about his attacking play and how he links up with players. And Spurs fullbacks, any fullback under Jose Mourinho, that's not going to be his prerogative necessarily. So I don't think from a footballer perspective it's the best move. But like as Dan said, at this stage of his life, it's like you don't want a what if. And the, you know, you've been to the stadium, JD. A great atmosphere there by all accounts. You're living in London. It's a big club. And obviously playing for Mourinho. But from a football perspective, I could see his form probably dip a bit, because he'd probably have more onus on defending.
Well, Serge Aurier was bombing forward, and I think actually the fullbacks were a little bit differently placed in the team at times at Spurs last season. Whether that was by design or by accident, I don't know. Aurier's going to go. He's going to be in the first team. That's pretty much a given. It is going to be a more of a flat back four at Tottenham. It is an incredible stadium. Obviously, it's the best club in the world. We all know that. But David, how do you see it working out for Matt Doherty? Is it a good move? How will he fit into the style of play, the counter-attacking style of Jose? Is it something you give the thumbs up to?
I think I'd have to agree with Dan and what he's touched on. I think Matt has been at Wolves for 10 years. Like, obviously, he's played in League One, been promoted, Championship, been promoted. I think he's probably almost plateaued with Wolves, that he's achieved everything that he can. And I think for him now, it's kind of like, it's a great new challenge. I imagine he would have been very happy to, you know, stay at Wolves. And then obviously he must have, you know, been given a phone call and said, would you be interested in going to Spurs? And I think he probably just thought, you know what, it's something different. It's out of my comfort zone. I'll go. As Dan said, it probably is, you know, Spurs would be one of the recognised top six, even though Wolves are probably a better team than them at the moment. Like, that you're kind of playing for a top six team. So, you know what? I think it is a good move for him. I hope he does well. He's a great lad. And the thing is, it's just, can Mourinho get the best out of him? as you know, Johnny spoke about there, we're used to seeing Matt play as a wing back with Wolves, where he's appearing in the box all the time. Do you know what I mean? If you look at the goals he's kind of scored over the last 2 years, he scored quite a few that you don't want to see him pegged back in this, you know, back four under Mourinho where they don't attack, because that will hamper, you know, Matt's best attributes of getting forward, because he is very composed in the final third. You know, he tends to pick the right pass and that. So you want to see him do well. But I definitely think, you know, if I was in his shoes, I'd say, do you know what? It's a different challenge. You know, I think you even hit the nail with Seamus, that Seamus is one that probably had, you know, that time he was in PFA Team of the Year, he probably had a choice of a few clubs. Even when David Moyes went to Manchester United, there was talks of Seamus going, that maybe he didn't kick up a bit of fuss and go. You stay there. The grass isn't always greener. Yes, I get that. But then you kind of stay in. You find yourself in a situation like this now where Everton haven't been doing so well over the last two seasons. And maybe Matt's feeling Wolves have reached the pinnacle of what they can get to. So he's looking for a new challenge.
Lads, I've met Matt Doherty's dad. He's an absolute gentleman. That is from Hugh. Have you encountered him much, David? Do you know him personally on the pitch?
Who, Matt?
Matt, yeah.
Yeah, I've played against Matt loads of times, and you know, I get on really well with him. You know, we've great conversations when I played for Ireland with him. You know, he's a lovely fella, loves his golf, which is, you know, he's a big Tiger fan. But the thing is, his father does. He doesn't have an agent. His father represents him with everything. I think he's done that from an early age, which is nice, because his father is making the utmost, well, the best decision for his son, you know, that way, rather than doing it for financial gain or whatever. They've probably sat down, had a long conversation about it. So, you know, he's a great lad, and I think he will do well. I'm more hopeful with Mourinho in there. So please God, he does.
Well, the documentary will be interesting when it comes out on Monday about Spurs and Amazon and all everything in the last year.
Well, it'll be interesting, or it'll be propaganda, John. It's very hard to know.
Can't be a bit of Spurs propaganda.
Well, this is it. You'll be glued to it. And the one thing I would say is, from an Irish perspective, I mean, every chance that Stephen Kenny is going to play a back four, and you know, we'll see how Matt is used by Spurs. I take what Johnny's saying about, you know, will he be sort of showcasing his defensive side more at Spurs or whatever, although, as you point out, John, correctly, like, the fullbacks there have been bombing a bit. But like, if there's any still like slight question mark about Matt, it might still be like defensively on occasion. And with Ireland, realistically, we're going to need him to play, you know, if he is going to play. I think the way Stephen Kenny is talking, I'm not sure what he's going to do about the whole Matt and Seamus Coleman thing, but you know, people are talking about three at the back and all this. I don't think that's going to happen with Stephen Kenny, certainly not in the short term. So if he is to play at right back, as he did against Denmark, you know, I suppose it's possibly one area at Premier League level that will be a bit of a new challenge for him. You know, he's all his Premier League football, aside from that stint when he was a kid, when he went over, has come in that sort of right wing back role. So if he has to evolve a bit with this challenge now, it might benefit Ireland in a way too, because he's going to have to, I think his responsibilities there are going to be more defensive than people think. I know he's going to be encouraged to get forward, but it's still different to play in a back four than, you know, the right of a, you know, right wing back with a back three.
Just on the Harry Maguire discussion, we had to take a break there before when David was speaking so eloquently about his experience and how well he knows Harry and how much he believes in what Harry is saying. Hi, lads. Listening with interest to the Harry Maguire discussion, I think the hosting stinks. That is from Eugene and Trim. Dan, you wanted to come in on that?
Well, I was really struck by David's story and how sort of reflective it was. And I think it's an interest, you know, like, obviously there are cases in isolation that we don't know what's happened. And, you know, there's often a thing about footballers on a night out, and there's always like almost a stigma that goes with it. And of course, I mean, there are footballers that behave badly. Like, there's bad stuff that happens that you sort of, you know, you can't defend, you know, like some of this, you know, Jack Grealish during lockdown and stuff like that, you know, various instances which don't reflect well on the profession as such. But sometimes, you know, there is this thing that, you know, footballers are accused of being out of touch with reality, but then when they try to do things in reality, as in go out with their mates from home, like they encounter problems. So then what happens then? Well, then you distance and you isolate from themselves. And obviously, you know, I know a lot of footballers through work and what. So what do? Well, they isolate themselves from that and they go to their VIP section and then they might have a lavish bill and then they're out of touch, you know. But you can't actually win sometimes. And it's sort of a sympathy that I do have, having occasionally been in situations with sort of players or ex-players who encounter this. And it is sometimes a thing with footballers. You know, I remember many years back being in a discussion with newspaper people, shall we say. And I think it was a story around, I think it was Robbie Keane was playing the guitar in Gibneys and Malahide or something. And I can't quite remember the context of it, but I remember being in a discussion with sort of newspaper people, and they were saying something like, well, you know, you'd never see Brian O'Driscoll doing that. And I was sort of quite young at the time and probably didn't really speak up. But I was sort of thinking, hang on, I'm out in Dublin a couple of times a weekend. You know, I'm seeing our rugby players out all the time. And by the way, that's fine. Like, that's absolutely normal and fine. You know, but there's always a thing sometimes about, like, our footballers being out. And is it something to do with how much they earn? And there's a sort of an attention and a pressure that comes with it. And you do have these stories. And that's why I just, like Dave was speaking about the phone, you know, the video outside McDonald's or whatever. And like, how often do all of us in life, like, you know, hear stories about such and such? I met that fella, whoever it might be, in such and such a place. God, he's a bit of a prat. As you know, he was a, you know, and like, you wouldn't know, someone could just be in bad form at that particular time and that moment. And it leads to like a broader generalization. So I just think it was a quite honest and open debate to start. I can't say what happened in the Maguire instance, and you know, but it's something to sort of take into consideration to some degree, that like if you want sort of your sports stars to have some kind of normal interactions in life where they encounter people, you know, people need to back off them on occasion. It's probably not always that easy for people to do it, but it can result in problems. But I don't know. I assume, David, like, you probably encounter people at various clubs, like, you get scarred by these odd instances, and then they shut themselves away. Like, there's actually a sort of a thing where you can't go out. Like, a lot of players don't want to go out in the town that the club they play for is, you know, they'll gravitate towards Manchester or whatever, even if they're playing elsewhere, because there's too many risks attached. Like Darren Gibson at Sunderland that time was a sort of a, you know, got recorded on a night out, and it was a disaster for him.
No, that's the problem. We're in the modern day of technology. Everyone has a phone, everyone's recording. Do you know, I could sit here for 2 hours talking to you about different occasions where I've been out, where different things have happened. And so when you get older and you look back and you reflect on them, you kind of go, well, what is going on? What am I doing? Like my father said to me, you have to take yourself out of that situation. I found myself in the park. This was before my son was born. I was with my daughter, who was 2. It was quite busy, nice summer's day. And my daughter was running around playing nicely. And a father came up and said, can you get a photo with my 5-year-old son? And I said, I can't. I'm minding my daughter. And he said, oh, you can. It'll take 2 seconds. But in that split moment of talking, my daughter had gone out of my eyesight. And I'm thinking, I'm in the park with my daughter. And this fella was persistently at me. And I just, like, I nearly lost the plot. Because I'm thinking, I'm just trying to play with my daughter. Just give me, I said, can you give me 10, 15 minutes? My wife is coming to collect us. But like, he kept resisting. And then my wife came and he was like, oh, I'm sorry. Eventually, and like, we took the photo. I was thinking, imagine if something had happened to my daughter while I'm taking a photo with another child. I was like, just give me 10, 15 minutes. It's like, there's different scenarios where all this stuff happens. And like, you spoke about Darren Gibson, like, you know, he's had a few drinks. He's talking to someone, but somebody's holding a phone and everything he says has been recorded, and then it's all over Twitter and it blows up. It's just, everybody is out to, you know, make headlines with their phones and be the fellow who, you know, captured something.
And it's also ruined the moment, because there'll be legitimate people that are just delighted to see you, David, take a photo or, you know, a quick video or whatever. And you'd be delighted to, you know, give them your time, the majority of people. But then it just ruins the moment. I don't really get the... people kind of feeling that they own you as a piece of public property because they see you on TV and because you're a well-paid person?
Yeah, well, I could talk about another occasion I had in Cork where somebody's come up and they've had a pop off me, right? And I've kind of like, my pals then kind of get their backs up thinking like, is this fella going to try and hit me or something, whatever? And I've just said to him, I said, have you got a second? And he's like, oh, no, I don't want to talk to you. And I said, sit down for a second. I said, what's the problem? He said, oh, I see you there with your mates. And I said, did you go to school with me? And he says, oh, no, I didn't. And I said, see all these fellas here. We all went to school together. We all live within 300 yards of one another. I said, we grew up. Like I said, I can ring any one of their mothers now, ask them to come collect me in town. They come collect me. They could ring my parents come collect them. That's how close we are. And then he was there going on and on. And I was like, I come home and I want to spend time with my friends, the people I grew up with, you know, and you're coming over and you're having a pop off me and you're shouting and you're roaring. And by the end of a 10-minute conversation, he turned and went, well, you're actually all right. And I said, are you going to go over to that person over there and talk to them? And he says, well, no, I don't know them. But I said, but you just explained to me that you don't know me. And he said, but yet you feel you have the right to come up and call me all sorts of names, but you don't know me either. Do you know? And that's the problem. Then you want to take yourself out of those situations, but then I miss out on spending time with my friends or, you know, doing something with my wife because somebody wants to, you know, get their word in and say something to you. I've even had occasions where I've been in England and my mother and father have gone for a drink on a Friday or Saturday night and somebody's gone up to them and had a cut off them. Now, I'm very fortunate that my father has been involved with amateur sport, but, you know, in my mind, like hurling and football should be professional in a way, like because of the dedication, you know, the crowds, the whole package of, you know, the GA. But he was able to deal with that. But my mother got upset. Like, you've got some 40-year-old man coming, abusing their son, you know, to the mother and father. And then, you know, it's kind of like, it's a shame that, you know, a couple of days later, I'm catching up with my dad on the phone. He's telling me about something that at the weekend when they're just trying to have a quiet drink. I said, people don't understand a lot of it, you know, and then you can understand why people get bitter, you know. It is a shame. No, but I'm talking about the negative experience. I've had so many positive ones and, you know, I've met so many incredible people from playing football that it's not just all negative. So I do need to say that as well.
And what are the positive experiences?
No, it's
all those jerseys in the back of that wall.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I've got all of them up there. If Messi, if I actually asked that question, if Messi leaves Barca, have I got to take that down and then try and get a new one? But
jerseys and bars from punters, though, coming up to him, John, you know?
No, but you get to meet people, you know. A lot of people, like, the best advice I'll give to someone is if you bump into a footballer doesn't want to talk about football. You know, I'm not going to ask you, you know, about your work and like examine you and your performances at work. That's not what they want to do. And no, I've just, people have been so nice, you know, like, I don't even know where to start. You put me on the spot there.
Well, you can have a think about it and we'll come back to it.
There has been some great things, though, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah. It's interesting, but I'd say there are lads, David, then that, you know, that shut themselves away from it just because they don't really like that attention. Effectively, the higher profile you go, the more secluded you probably have to be to some degree. Because as you mentioned, you put yourself in that position. There is an element of like you're told you're asking for it, but I guess maybe some of the absolute A-listers you've sort of played with or encountered, it's sort of pretty hard for them to really do that, to go out with their mates from school and do anything like that.
Yeah, of course. And look, then it's about identifying, like, you know, your local kind of pub where you can kind of go where you know everyone inside there. And imagine if you guys wanted to go for a drink, that these fellas are nearly going into a pub where they want to know every single person in the room so that they're left alone. It's just kind of, hello, who are you? And it is a shame at times, you know. It's, one of the beautiful things is when I go home, I go with my father for a drink when I go home and catch up with him, but we'll go to the pub where he knows everyone in the pub, so it's fine. And you don't really have, you might have fellas come up and talk to you, but they're fellas you've probably known and my father's friends for 20 years, 25 years, so it's fine chatting to them about life, you know. But yeah, it is a shame.
I think it's great, JD. When you can, speaking from a personal perspective, when you go to the pub, the members are actually trying to avoid you.
Sorry, Johnny. We just got to take a break. We'll be back after four with more chat about with David Myler, Johnny Ward, and Dan McDonald. And Neil on Twitter, Dan is right about the coverage of football has been out and about. GA lads get the worst coverage for having drinks. Madness when you think about that. They're amateurs. Rugby lads have a great setup. Just the teams for the Community Shield: Arsenal, Martinez, Bellerin, Holding, Louise, Tierney, Maitland, Niles, Elneny, Xhaka, Saka, Nketa and Aubameyang in Liverpool, Alisson, Williams, Gomez, Van Dijk, Robertson, Fabinho, Milner, Wijnaldum, Mane, Salah and Firmino. This is Off the Ball Saturday on News Talk 53106, the number of your text messages. Back after this. You are welcome back to Off the Ball Saturday on News Talk. John Duggan with you 3 till 5 o'clock in the company of the former Republic of Ireland captain David Myler, the football correspondent with the Irish Independent Dan McDonald, and the broadcaster and journalist Johnny Ward. Remember, our football coverage brought to you thanks to Paddy Power. For more information on responsible gambling, visit dunlewy.net. You can text us on 53106. You can tweet us at Off the Ball. You can also watch us as well. Almost looks like we're on a game show today on the Off the Ball social channels. For Periscope on Twitter, at Off the Ball, on YouTube, on Facebook, and on the new OTB Sports app for iOS and Android. Search OTB Sports in your app store to download that. Some texts in here. We'll get to them shortly. Just Daniel, on this Nations League, we're playing Bulgaria and Finland in the next week. Stephen Kenny's first game's in charge. Really exciting for Stephen. Obviously, his new dawn, the new era. Just explain to us, because these Nations League matches have replaced friendlies, why are they being played? What is the purpose of them? And how do they help with qualification for the Euros?
Yeah, well, why are they being played? I mean, first of all, the Nations League really exists because of money, ultimately. It's sort of replacing friendlies in the international calendar. And it's funny, actually, it's very different take in media coverage sometimes between England and Ireland and perceptions. Unfortunately, we're so used to being cash-strapped here and, struggling that a lot of people in England are like, what, did they just cancel this Nations League, obviously, with the pandemic and so on? You know, why are they bothering even playing these games? They just cancelled them. When the reality is, you speak to people around UEFA and stuff that this very important 10 million per year, it's a bit less at the moment, but rising to that TV deal that goes to all 55 UEFA member nations, which is huge for a country like ours, that relies on the TV rights from the Champions League and the high-end Nations League games, because obviously League A, you have England, Germany, all the big teams playing each other, that's worth loads of money, and that's more lucrative than friendlies and erratic calendars. So that's a part of it. In terms of football terms, yeah, it's a weird one, because the games are important-ish, but you don't really find out till after the main campaign how important they were. So it's often repeated. I'm not having a go at Mick McCarthy here, but it's often repeated that when Mick McCarthy, at least he got Ireland to the Euros playoffs. He didn't. It was Martin O'Neill got Ireland to the Euros playoffs, because Ireland got to the Euros playoffs because of their Nations League ranking. And what the games in the Nations League do is it determines your final Nations League ranking, your position in the chart. And then at the end of World Cup qualifying next year, the playoff places are doled out to the highest ranked Nations League teams that haven't otherwise qualified for the World Cup. So that's your backdoor route, I guess. So to try and sum it up in simple terms, where Ireland are at now, they're in League B of the Nations League. For the Nations League realistically to matter, Ireland probably need to win their group. They need to win their Nations League group, the four-team group, with Bulgaria, Finland and Wales. Because then in March, hopefully all going to plan, we will start World Cup qualifying. There will be 10 qualifying groups. The 10 group winners will qualify automatically. And then the 10 group runners up, and hopefully Ireland will be first or second in their group, but the 10 group runners up go into a playoff series with the two highest ranked Nation League teams that haven't finished in the top two of their qualifying group. And the only way Ireland are going to be one of those top two is if they win their group in the Nations League, basically. So hopefully we don't have to rely on the Nations League eventually. But if you have a really, really good Nations League, then there's a possibility that if you are struggling in the World Cup campaign next year, you have that little bit of an insurance thing in the back door to help you back in.
Text in here, Kevin J on YouTube, have seen Jose talking about defending with a back four, but attacking with a back three and using his right back like a wing back. That's what I was saying earlier on. I don't think Jose is a fool. He will know how best to use Matt Doherty's skills. Doherty is twice the player Coleman is at this stage. No way Coleman should be playing ahead of Matt. A tweet in from Graham Hunter, the journalist, the Spanish journalist, the legendary Spanish journalist, listening to a credible, articulate, sympathetic David Myler and Off the Ball right now, engrossing chat. And lads, these two games are vital for Kenny to prepare for the Slovakia game. That alone shows how important the Nations League is. That is from Jim. David, let's play a bit of fantasy football here. The Slovakia game obviously is a crucial one, the playoff semi-final for the Euros. What should Stephen Kenny's 1-11 be right now, do you think?
Oh. Wow. Randolph Coleman, Duffy, Egan, Ender, McCarthy, Hendrick, Arthur, Conley, McGoldrick, if he's fit, McLean.
Okay.
That's off the top of my head now, without looking too much. Like, yes, there's a case for Matt Doherty. I think going forward, Matt will eventually take over from Seamus. If he plays with a back five, which I don't think he will, I agree with, I think it was Dan who said it, I think he'll play with a back four. I just think Seamus is defensively, better than Matt. Matt is better going forward. You know, I think Duffy hasn't obviously played as much as, say, John Egan has, but I think, like, I'm really excited for Stephen Kenny, and you know, I watched a bit of 21s. I won't say I watched loads of them, but you know, it was exciting stuff. But now it's kind of going up a level. I do feel from a bit that, you know, if he hadn't have had COVID, he would have probably taken over, say, at the end of the summer. You would hope that he could have had probably, you know, the month of June, where he could have had two or three friendly games, that he could have, like, sat down with the lads and, you know, gone over things and shown everyone what he was doing, and then given players the opportunity to play. Like, he's coming in, the two games against Bulgaria and Finland are going to be tough, like, because, as Dan said, you really need to do well in your Nations League. Because I think if you kind of go in, if we go into the World Cup qualifying with a positive results in the Nations League, it will then probably kick you on that, you know, your form is good, your spirits are high. There's kind of that buzz factor. Obviously, with Stephen coming in, you want the games to go well. Like, it's an exciting time. So I'm hoping. Look, we'll see what 11 he picks. I've given you 11 there as quick as I could.
It's an interesting team. You know, it's like Stephen, like, it's, you know, this whole debate with back three and back five and all this, and I've sort of got a bit miffed by it at times in recent weeks and months, because there is an element of, and of course you have to be flexible and versatile, and I think he actually dabbled with that formation a bit in his, you know, younger managerial days. But true, I suppose, like, what's got him this job was, you know, the good years at Dundalk, and although he had the job, I guess what confirmed it and probably, you know, made sure that the quick transition happened in many respects is how good the 21s were too. And there was a pattern really in terms of how the team operated to some degree, and you can see that through the squad that he selected the other day, which to me wasn't surprising at all, really. We might talk about Michael Obafemi in due course. But like, how Stephen Kenny's teams will operate, and it was a very pointed, I asked him about it, like, about the listing of the squad, like the breakdown of the 23 players, that some people might have had a bit of an eye-opener that James McLean and, was it Callum O'Dowd and Callum Robinson were, well, Callum Robinson would be, but, you know, halfway house maybe, but McLean and O'Dowd were listed as forwards. And that's sort of an insight into what we're going to get, in that it will be very much a sort of a 4-3-3 or like a 4-2-3-1, or a version of it, where basically you're going to have like a central striker and two wingers either side who are going to be very forward and very attacking. And I think people probably need to have that sort of in their mind, I think, when sort of mulling over potential 11s. And like, he has then that midfield three, which is like that choice from, you know, McCarthy, Hendrick, Conor Hourihan, Arthur, Malumbi, Robbie Brady, maybe, because I think he loves Robbie Brady. I think he's a big fan of Robbie Brady, who if he can get himself going again, will have a chance maybe playing as a sort of a, even maybe even a sort of a 10 or whatever. But then those other players, it's going to be a front three. And the interesting one for me is when David McGoldrick is back fully fit, will he play him, and will he always play him as that sort of central one of the three, or would he be tempted at times, if he was really positive, to play him as more of a number 10? Because I think he's always liked throughout his career to have that sort of strong running number 9. That's why Shane Long, I think, is back, and that's why I've always been told, and you can see for the 21s, like, he's a big fan of Adam Ida, that type of striking player. And I think with the Kenny teams, like, they're the personalities you need to look out for. Like, that strong number 9. But at times, would he play McGoldrick there? And those wingers, where he uses Aaron Connolly, like, there's going to be a lot of big questions and debates, but they're good debates to have because there's good options in the squad. And that's why, like, the Obafemi thing, he was able to explain it tactically, because he doesn't necessarily, in his mind anyway, fit into that number 9 vision or fit into that two wide player vision. And that's why he's gone with the squad that he has.
Johnny, your 11 is?
Sorry, Johnny.
Absolutely.
I want to make one change. Harry Arthur, Harry's out. Conor Horan. I forgot about Conor. I was rattling off my brain.
Cork, stick together.
What has Harry done to you in the last 10 minutes? Bloody hell. I was surprised at that, so I'm not surprised you changed it, because Conor Horan, set pieces are going to be massive. Like, Jack Byrne didn't obviously get into the squad, which wasn't a major surprise. But if Jack were in the squad, one of the big things would be his set piece delivery is as good nearly as I've seen anywhere. It's just unbelievable. But Horan isn't far off. And, you know, as much as a lot can be said about Stephen Kenny will do this, Stephen Kenny will do that, they're going to be pragmatic as well. And they're going to recognise that we have a set piece threat in the likes of Duffy and so on. And I think Horan will play. Dan's point about, McLean being listed as a forward, that actually struck me as well when I saw the squad announcement, because, like, McLean has been like an auxiliary left half for Ireland much of the time. Like, he's basically had so much defending to do. And it's been a fairly dysfunctional kind of... I think his relationship with Stevens can be a lot better if he plays. He wouldn't necessarily be my favourite player in the world, but on his form for Stoke, you'd have to say he probably has a good chance of starting. My team would be same back five as David, with the exception of Doherty starting ahead of Coleman, which I think he will. I think Kenny will be very much about his fullbacks, offering an attacking threat. I think Doherty probably edged it above Coleman. I think on form in the Premier League, it's hard to argue which one you'd go with, albeit Doherty hasn't been playing as a conventional right back. So it'll be 4-5-1 or 4-3-3 in midfield. Horan, Hendrick, McCarthy, and I'd hope O'Dowda might come in. Now, maybe I'm hoping against hope. If he plays on the right with his left foot, he can come in, and he's a very good technical player. And the right-hand side is a kind of a... I don't know what Dan thinks in this. I honestly don't know who they're going to play there. Could be Connolly, maybe. As you're saying, there's going to be like a striker kind of playing on the right.
I think he likes O'Dowda and Callum Robinson as well. I wouldn't be surprised if either... I think Callum Robinson would probably have a shot if he's in... If he starts the season well.
I know. We've had this debate, you and I, about McLean. And obviously, McLean and Kenny go back a long way. But... for me, he doesn't offer enough. He does great defensive work, but we'll see. Maybe he's probably in pole position to start. Up top, up top's going to be interesting. I think he might play Ida. Now, Troy Powers, I see he scored a lovely goal in pre-season today. I am absolutely dying to see how he does in Millwall. I'm really looking forward to actually going over and watching a game and seeing him play, because I think this could be a real seminal year for him. But in terms of Obafemi, I mean, whatever sympathy people would have had for him, the fact that he's misspelled interesting in his tweets kind of probably would have lost a lot of respect for him there. But he's not going to play, because, as Dan said, he's going to... Like, Kenny's view is quite simple, as far as I know. It's like Obafemi probably needs to be up top with someone else. He's not a conventional hold the ball up. Whereas Ida, if you look at Ida for the 21s, which was really intriguing, Ida improved massively as the 21s kind of went on. But one thing that he was very kind of capable of was an out ball. So if Ireland are pressed very high, they won't be afraid to say to Randolph, listen, just go for Ida and play it long. Now, he's obviously a long way to go yet. He's brief, you know, cameos in the senior ranks last year for Norwich were a bit of a mixed bag, I think. You know, the Preston game probably got him a lot of headlines, but Preston were quite poor that day. So he's going to grow as a player. I think he's a great talent. And I have to say, I've been really impressed with his development. But he will be that out ball because he's well able to hold up the ball. He's a big, strong lad. He's quick and he's intelligent. And the big thing is, as much as Kenny, like the teams we've named there, they're not a dramatic departure from what Mick McCarthy played. But I'll tell you one thing that will definitely happen. He won't abide by his midfielders running away from responsibility. And that includes all three of them, with the exception of McCarthy, who hasn't been playing. They're going to have to get on the ball and not be running away from it like they have in so many games.
I was going to come in there maybe and ask David about James McCarthy, because he's the one that Stephen Kenny probably gave the hardest sell to during the week. And amazingly, I don't think he's played for Ireland since 2016, which is sort of extraordinary, that game in Moldova. And I think, you know, Stephen's point of view was like he should be considered the best midfielder of his Irish generation, and he just hasn't been. And I know Stephen would have encountered him back in Scotland in 2007 when he was at Dunfermline, and James was at Hamilton. But what's your take on like the struggles that James has had, like aside from injuries? I mean, that's obviously the overwhelming one, but even I think Stephen's view was that actually at this stage of his career, James needs the game ahead of him and get him facing the goal, and that maybe he can be that, I suppose, that number six, for want of a better term, that position that you would have played a lot. And what do you think about James and that role at this stage of his career?
No, if you look at the Germany game where we drew at home, we won, sorry, I beg your pardon. I'm getting my games mixed up. James actually played as the six, and he was unbelievable. I think, yes, what Stephen has said, he should be regarded. Ever since I've been involved with Ireland, going back the last 10 years, James has been the best midfielder. There's no question about it. He has the most to his game, defensively and going forward. I think it's just a case of, he seems to have found a way now to keep his body right. He's just been terribly unlucky with injuries for the last 3-4 years. And he's chasing. There's almost that case, if you look at, like, you know, he started with Hamilton at 16, that he's probably played so many games. If you look at his time from like Hamilton going to Wigan, every year he was playing 35, 36 games. Like, that his body might have, like, and now he's found a way to, you know, accommodate it. But I'm desperate to see him back in an Ireland shirt, because he is the best all-round midfielder we have, and he will be crucial for us going forward for these next few years. So if Stephen, you know, can get him into the six, he is no problem doing that. If he wants to play him as more an advanced one, if you want to look at maybe playing like Malumbi deeper, fair enough. But James, for me, if he's fit, has to play.
And David, who is the striking? Is Adam Ida somebody that you think is ready for this level?
Oh, yeah. Every Cork man's ready for this level. No, he is. Look, like as Johnny touched on, he had that game against Preston where he got the hat-trick. I don't think Preston were up to much that day, but still, you've got to be in the position to, you know, score the goals and what have you. I think his performances for the 21s were very encouraging. I heard a lot about him from Colin O'Brien with the Ireland 17s. So he's kicked on and he's developed, and there is a great case for it, because he's a big, tall, young fella, but he's also quick. So he brings something a bit different than, you know, even Troy Parrott, who's probably more known as a goal scorer, a kind of a poacher, a Robbie Keane type. Whereas Adam could probably hold up the ball. So I wouldn't be surprised to see Adam feature in these games. You know, he can probably offer that little bit more than the others, holding the ball up and then obviously using his pace. So if Stephen plays the 4-3-3, you do really need a hold-up man through the middle, because at times if your wide two are pinned back a bit and they have to drop back to give, you know, the midfielders a hand, you need someone who can hold the ball up.
Texan here, is there any evidence Doherty's any good at a right-back? Victor Moses is a brilliant wing-back but a terrible full-back. McGoldrick, lads, give us a break. We need to score goals. Goals win games. Or have you all forgot about what the game is really about? That is from Bobby the Dub. Stephen Ward was speaking to us during the week, and he says that Stephen Kenny, who gave him his Bohemians debut such a long time ago, is going to be a success.
Well, firstly, I'm obviously, you know, delighted to see he's got the chance. It's a fantastic achievement. You know, obviously, Stephen gave me my debut when I was at Bohemians as a striker, albeit, but You know, he's seen something in me then to bring me on, and obviously that was the start of my career. So, you know, I'll be forever grateful for that. And, you know, I think, you know, as a young lad there, I could see the hunger he had for the game. You know, I could see he wanted to get to a high level. And obviously, you know, there's no greater achievement than becoming the senior international manager. So, you know, first and foremost, it's a great achievement for him. And you know, it's obviously delighted for him, you know, because he played that little, you know, that part of my career of giving me my first game. So, obviously, a new beginning for him and the lads. And listen, I think from, you look at how the under-21s done when he came in, I think he had a fantastic record there. You know, we got to see some of their games and the way they played. And, you know, I think he'll want to bring that transition through to the first team. I think he likes to play football from what I've seen, and wants to play an attractive style. And, you know, I'll be expecting that. You know, I'm sure there'll be new faces in. You know, lads that have done well in the under-21s will be bedded in during his tenure. You know, I think if you mix that with the sort of experienced lads that we have playing week in, week out in the Premiership, I think there are some exciting times ahead. And listen, obviously Mick done a great job. And I think going into a job like the Irish job, to know that you're only two games or two wins away from qualifying for a major tournament is unbelievable. I'm sure Stephen will be, you know, very much appreciative of that. And hopefully we can go and do the business and qualify for the Euros next year.
Been a huge amount of frustration, I think, David, with a lot of fans about the style of play over the years, the functional concentration on results first, whether you agree with it or disagree with it under certain managers. There's a lot of those excitement about Stephen Kenny because he played such a progressive form of football. But like, if results don't go our way, does that sour? How long of a honeymoon period does he have?
Well, look, all managers are judged on results. It's all good and well going out playing this, you know, attractive style of football. But if we get beat, but we have 70% possession, people won't care. You know, you look at the Germany game I alluded to with James's performance, we won 1-0 and I think we had 15-16% possession. You know, people still go on about that game, you know. Even the Wales game I played in, we beat Wales. We probably had 40% possession. So it's not going to be a case of, you know, we want to, like, the best case scenario is we play attractive football, we dominate teams, we're on the front foot and we win games. But if we're not winning games, then, you know, that's what it's all down to. Like, as Stephen Ward there touched on, he's two games away from qualifying for a major tournament. You know, there's only Jack, Mick, Martin, Giovanni have done it. So he's a great opportunity to put his name amongst those great managers who've, you know, done incredible things with Ireland. So He just needs to, the hardest thing in for him, he's in, and then the games will come thick and fast, but they're not friendlies, they're almost Nation League. So he needs to, you know, I know full well that all the players will buy into it. You know, they'll be excited by this. I even saw your interview with Enda Stevens where he spoke about he's excited about it. I know they all are. So he just needs to get in, keep it, you know, get the message across early and get the players playing the way he wants to, and then obviously just hope that, you know, we put in the performances and we get the results that we need.
Dan, well, you've learned along the way from his disappointments. Shamrock Rovers being one that obviously springs to mind, and that he can bring positively to this biggest challenge of his life now, Stephen.
Yeah, no, I think you will. I think, you know, a lot of things just went wrong in that year, Rovers. I think probably... and he came in off the back of someone extremely successful. And yeah, I think maybe, I don't know, it's hard to generalise and apply it to international football and so on. Like, it's a difficult thing to do. I think his time at Dunfermline, probably one of the biggest things he learned, I think, was about staff, you know, having a good staff around you and people that you probably trust around you. And that when you start somewhere that you have that sort of, you have that, you know, that team, that surrounds you. And that's why things from the start at Dundalk, he almost had a blank canvas and, you know, he hit the ground running, you know, and, but yet from the start, like everyone in that club had effectively been brought there by him. Now, one of the things he's done with the Ireland squad, you know, now, I mean, it's not just that he's got Keith Andrews and Damien Duff who are going to be hugely important. And I think with players and, you know, relations, and I think they're two very smart picks, and Rory Higgins, who he's very close to more for his analysis. But he's also like changed a lot of, say, the kit men, the backroom stuff, brought in people from the 21s, and like, that's a lot of turnover in one go. And, you know, Dave would obviously be very much aware that there would have been some people who were sort of part of the furniture there who've moved along. But I guess, you know, he was hired to be Stephen Kenny, not to come in and just be a manager overseeing a structure that was there before. And the FEI are backing him. There is no doubt that even though there's been a transition from who appointed him to who is there now, you know, he's getting his way, I guess, in the sense that he's been allowed to, like, make the, you know, the personnel decisions, to give him everything that he wants. So it's up to him to sink or swim, really. But I think that a lot of decisions he possibly made over the years was to, if you inherit something, you know, that you bring your own team in, that you're around you. Like, again, I understood where people were coming from the perspective that you have a legend like Robbie Keane there. But if he didn't want him to be a part of his staff, then he shouldn't be a part of his staff. And that's what he's got. He's been given a great platform. But of course, then the flip side of that is, you know, you don't have as many excuses if things work out, because you've been given what you've wanted. So, like, I think there's going to be an understanding about the next couple of months, I think, from people anyway, unless there's a lot of extremes around the Ireland team sometimes with coverage. And listen, I'm a part of it, I can't preach about it, of course. Like, if you lose 5-1 somewhere, then of course there'll be a massive inquiry. But I think that broadly there's an acceptance that, you know, you have to give this appointment a bit of time to breathe. And a lot of the previous managers over the last decade, when the football wasn't great at times, they had a very simple brief to qualify and just qualify. And the whole business plan was about qualifying. And there was no real interest about a 4-year plan or anything like that. It was about getting to the next tournament. And they probably tailored their decision-making accordingly. With this one, if you're saying you want to change the style, if you're saying that you want the 21s to link in with the senior team in some respects, and you have a bit of a personality and a pattern, then you probably can't make snap judgments after 3 months. So I think he will probably get a bit of time, that World Cup campaign, you know, to really show what he can do. And there'll be judgments at the end of it as regards, because his contract only goes till the end of that campaign. There will be judgments at the end of it as regards, you know, do you go again? But I would imagine if things start well, you get the sense that people would probably be willing to try and make that commitment a bit longer. But it's, you know, you never know. You never know how the dressing room will take to him, and we can have our theories about how it will go, and I'd be hopeful it will go well. But of course, you know, the proof will be in the pudding.
And Johnny, like, the one thing actually that Stephen will not have to worry about if the results don't go so smoothly at the beginning is the fans, because generally Irish fans are not shy about making their feelings known about the team.
Yeah, David's obviously the man to kind of ask about that. I'd say, like, Glenn Whelan would probably have a story or two to tell about how he felt like maybe he was appreciated by Ireland fans. And I'd say some of the players at times would feel that they weren't, you know, appreciated enough maybe by the fans, and the style of football may be greater with some people. But to be honest, like, I think there's, you know, the attitude towards the League of Ireland, to my mind, has changed since in the last sort of 5-10 years, more or less since Dundalk in 2016 and to an extent in Rovers 2011. So I think I think there's a lot of support for him, even from, like, I think there's a massive groundswell of support across Ireland. And I think if he started badly, he'd be given ample kind of patience, and the crowd would be after him, would be behind him rather. But it's a strange campaign. You know, he's trying to blood players in, like, it's bringing in those young guys that have very little or no experience really of international football. You know, Malumbi, we haven't mentioned as well. He can't be that far off playing, because his, by all accounts, I didn't really see him at Millwall last year, but his performances were probably every bit as good as what, you know, some of our more established midfielders were producing. Like, if you look at his role in the 21s, like, Kenny absolutely loves him, and he's had a proper championship season now for whatever the greater part of the season, and he's probably knocking on the door. He's probably not a million miles off, and he's a player that I think can grow into a real leader for Ireland. But it's kind of straight in at the deep end in terms of what the COVID situation has been, and I think people will be patient. You're not going to expect a team that essentially played a certain brand of football for its shelf life to dramatically change overnight. I'm expecting changes, but main what I would expect is that the midfielders just want to get on the ball a lot more.
Okay, I've got to take a break, lads. Off the Ball Saturday on News Talk. Back to talk about Dundalk, Bohemians, Shamrock Rovers and other matters after this. You're welcome back to Off the Ball Saturday on News Talk. John Duggan with you 3 to 5 o'clock in the company of the former Republic of Ireland captain, David Myler, Johnny Ward, the broadcaster and journalist and the football correspondent of the Irish Independent, Dan McDonnell. Our text number 53106. You can also tweet us at Off the Ball. You can watch us on the social channels for Periscope at Off the Ball on Twitter, for YouTube, Facebook and on the new OTB Sports app, which you can download now for iOS and Android. Search OTB Sports in your app store. Our football coverage brought to you with thanks to Paddy Power. For more information on responsible gambling, visit dunluie.net. If Kenny doesn't qualify playing Scottish football, can all the media experts sign a pledge never to go on about Irish teams playing like the continental teams? We should play like Charlton's teams. Still the greatest era of Irish football. That is from Des in Cork. We've got Mark on Twitter, Randolph, Doherty, Duffy, Egan, Stevens, McCarthy, Malumbi, Hendrick, Brady, Ida and Connolly. What is your Irish team under Stephen Kenny? Savo on Twitter, guys, as a Dundalk fan, I want Stephen Kenny to be a success, but I worry the press will not let him be. Staunton won 9 out of 17 games compared to Michael O'Neill, who won 1 out of his first 18 at Northern Ireland, but he was given time as opposed to Stan's vilification. Give Kenny the time, please. That is from Gareth in Armagh. Dan, you've written today in the Irish Independent about Dundalk. So you're from the area, obviously, but that's got nothing really to do with that. But Filippo Giovagnoli, no experience in management, is taking over. We've got a greater influence of the American owners on the club and a title slipping away. The title's gone, effectively. Dundalk effectively being negatively influenced by the decisions they're making.
Yeah, I mean, I suppose, like, you know, the Dundalk recent story is I'm still reeling from that Steve Staunton Michael O'Neill comparison. That's just not it doesn't stand, unfortunately, but not meaning to be harsh. I mean, like, it's obviously tied in with, like, what was one of the great stories of recent times, which was the Dundalk charge in 2016, which basically got to Stephen Kenny the job. I don't think you would have got it without having done that, as much as he won the double in 2018. I think, you know, to point to it, you had to point to those Europa League games. Like that text there on about Jack Charlton, we go back to playing the Jack Charlton way. Jack Charlton at the time was actually, the style he was playing was in keeping with trends of that era to some respects. There was a move towards that type of approach. And now you just have to move with the times. And I think how Stephen Kenny pitted his Dundalk team, a team of League of Ireland players, against very good European opposition in 2016. That was the proof for getting the job. And it's not all total football over the top stuff. It's more, you know, trying to dominate the game but also, you know, not 11 behind the ball if you're struggling type stuff. But anyway, as an aside, off the back of that, you know, American owners come in and take over Dundalk with the hope that every year you can replicate that success, that every year you can try and get a team to the group stages of European football. Like, you come to Ireland, it's not that hard to qualify for Europe if you have the resources that they have. So at the very least, you're going to be trying Europa League every year. But their ambition was to qualify for Champions League every year. And their ambition initially was to do so with Stephen Kenny. But of course, Stephen Kenny left at the end of their first season in 2018. So this company, Peak Six, you know, they're the main owners, and their plan, yeah, was to, so I suppose, crack Europe, and they do have and still have resources that, you know, people owning clubs here could only dream of. Definitely, probably one of the wealthiest groups that we've probably ever had involved in football here. But what has happened over the last 2 years, but more so in particular the last probably year, 6 months, 3 months, is that that influence from outside has become a problem. And, you know, there's been a lot going on over the last couple of weeks, and I was aware of a certain amount of it, and sort of dug into it a bit more. And that's what led to, I suppose, a sort of substantial enough lengthy piece today. You know, having spoken to a lot of people who are in the middle of it, it's obviously hard for them to speak out publicly because, you know, they have their jobs to do and whatever. But what that influence has become probably not such a good thing. I don't want to get into it because it's a very long piece and I can't sort of explain sort of 4,000 words in 2 minutes. But the main issue that you've had is that there was obviously a plan there to operate in a particular way, and people assumed that you would have this big company over in America that would have their people that would be sent over here, you know, and then, you know, good people hired on the ground, and that's how things would operate. But they haven't really got the balance right in the last couple of years. I mean, Vinnie Perth did very well to win the league last year, but even then there would have been sort of, you know, advisors and people around the place that maybe they wouldn't have seen eye to eye. I think even David was linked with them at one stage, I think a transfer, but there was a lot of, you know, outside links, recruitment players, so on and so forth. There was, you know, that's football. That's what happens. But what's really happened in the end of 2019 onwards is that the current chairman, who is the father of the Peak Six founder, Matt Hulsizer, Bill Hulsizer is his father. He doesn't work for Peak Six, but he steadily came into the club. People probably initially thought, well, this is great. You know, it's brilliant involvement. So the family are really buying into this. They aren't just over there not worrying about this investment. Like, the family are really bought into it, and they have. But he has become more of an influence behind the scenes, and all the people that were probably appointed on the ground, the buffers, they've all left for various reasons. And what we've basically had a situation in the last year that really the investment, what it's boiled down to, is you have maybe, you know, the manager here and you have the chairman there, and maybe there's a board, all right, but they're primarily based in the States. And yeah, there's just been some wacky stuff happening, really. And the, you know, it happens all the time in football that new owners come to the sport that don't necessarily know the game. They're learning about the game. They might have questions. They might have comments they might make. You know, they might wonder why the goalkeeper doesn't take corners because he's the best striker of the ball. Like these are queries that happen. Like, I'm not trying to, like, I can understand how, I'm sure if every discussion that's ever happened from a new owner to a football club was detailed, you could have similar stories. And, you know, but when that influence starts to get too close, when those questions start to get too close to the point where, you know, there's phone calls coming in around, before, during games, trying to get to people, trying to get instructions across, then you've lost it, really. You know, you've lost it badly. And there's no coincidence that there's, like, things haven't been going well there, because people behind the scenes have been probably coping with unusual stuff. And it's come to a head with the manager, Vinnie Perth, leaving and basically not denying on several occasions that there was disagreements and, you know, discussions around team selection. But more importantly, perhaps, a lot of the people on the ground, like every League of Ireland club, they're, you know, at their very core, they probably are still community clubs that still rely on volunteers. A lot of good people who've been involved with the club for a long, long period of time are all stepping back or walking away because they're finding it quite hard to deal with the ownership, and just some stuff that is possibly born out of just what you could describe as cultural differences, but distractions and stuff that just shouldn't be happening, should just not be happening, you know. Stuff around, you know, nearly playing the under-19 team in a league game because there was a friendly against Celtic they wanted to play, and there would have been 14-day COVID restrictions that prevented people from playing, and all sorts of sort of stuff around that. Stuff that you shouldn't be dealing with when it's hard enough to run with a club as it is. So,
okay,
simple facts are people are stepping back who shouldn't be stepping back, and that should be a red flag for a lot of people.
Johnny, just you were at Rovers the other night, and you did an amazing job on the stream. I believe you kept the show on the road. Is there any kind of worry about Rovers at the moment with their recent form, that they took a while to get rid of this Finnish team, and that they've had a couple of draws? Would Bohemians might have a chance now in the league, do you think?
They absolutely do. And, you know, I don't think anyone really gave Bohs. Bohs looked like a team that, you know, they'd restructured a bit in the off-season, and it's kind of wasn't inconceivable that they'd struggle to make Europe this season, but none of it. And they were by far the most impressive of our European teams, even though they were knocked out. They were playing a Hungarian mob that were, like, full of internationals and were a good side, and to me looked way better than the team that battered Dundalk. They looked like they had a bit about them, and Bohs went toe to toe with them. Bohs wouldn't play the most, like, they wouldn't necessarily play the most attractive football in the league, but they have two really quick wingers, and their wingers cause a lot of problems to the Hungarian side, and they weren't able to deal with them in some respects, and that's why Bowes scored. But Bowes missed two great chances as well, Keith Ward involved in both. I've seen Rovers twice recently. I saw them against Shells in the league, and I didn't think they were great in that game. And I thought, it's funny when you're at the games and, you know, you can hear the players, you can basically hear everything. And I thought they were mentally a little bit just not quite there. And they were kind of getting a bit narky in the second half when things were going against them and didn't really create a lot. That followed on a nil-all draw against Pats when, you know, they really should have won the game because they were playing against 10 men for much of it. Didn't create an awful lot in the second half either, despite battering them. And then the other night, I suppose the thing you could say about them was, first of all, they had a horrible, horrible decision go against them. I honestly don't think anyone in the ground except a referee thought it was a penalty when the ball clearly hit Joey O'Brien's head. But Joey O'Brien recovered from that to not only score one penalty, but to score two. And Liam Scales, who really, you know, would have been somewhat vilified if they'd gotten knocked out because he was stupidly sent off for, to my mind, two really unnecessary yellow cards in quick succession. So they played the entire extra time with 10 men, and it was back against the wall stuff. And they came through it. And the penalty situation, you know, I didn't really fancy them on penalties. I thought mentally, I don't know where they were, but they came through it. But the flip side of all this is teams, I think, have a way of playing against them. And Bowes have a really good record against Rovers over the last few years. Now, not so much the last couple of games, but Bowes won't have any fear of Rovers whatsoever. The Rovers system they play with the two wing-backs, Ferrugia and Ronan Finn, would be vulnerable, definitely vulnerable against those Bowes wingers. Ferrugia's not a defender, and he's not actually playing that well from the couple of games I've seen. And if Bowes go ahead against Rovers, they tend to win. So, like, I know it seems an absolutely incredible thing to see, but I think Rovers are Bowes are like 5-2 to win the league now, and that's probably reflective of their chance. They absolutely have a chance. And in fairness to them, John, it's been a great story. I was really disappointed for them that they didn't get through in Europe, because where that club has come from and what it's doing in the community, the work it's doing to help people that are, you know, worse off through football in an era when, you know, you've so many Premier League you know, giants and millionaires and Messi on a million a week or whatever it is. This is grassroots football, and Bowes have been exemplary in that regard, but they are definitely in with a chance of the title race. Keith Long has talked it down, but they have a chance.
Okay, Darren Hennessy on Twitter, we're picking Ireland 11s here for Stephen Kenny. Randolph, Doherty, Duffy, Egan, Stevens, Malumbi, McCarthy, Brown, Robinson, Long and Connolly. And James on Twitter, Randolph, Doherty, Duffy, Egan, Stevens, Malumbi, Hendrick, Harahan, McLean, Connolly and McGoldrick in a 4-4-2. As a Republic of Ireland season ticket holder and a match, away match goer, I'd rather watch two campaigns of good football under Stephen Kenny, regardless of the qualification outcome, than another campaign of rubbish football. Dated hoofball tactics will get exposed to big tournaments anyway. Give Kenny at least 4 years to get it right and make the most of his talented squad. 1-0 to Arsenal. Aubameyang on 13 minutes in the Community Shield against Liverpool. Seanie Maguire has been on the mark for Preston against Mansfield in the EFL Cup. I just want to ask you, David, about Chelsea. Thiago Silva, Ben Chilwell, the expected signing of Kai Havertz. You've also got Werner and Ziyech in there. Probably going to spend about $200 million this summer. Can they make a run at the title, do you think?
No. short and sweet of it. I think Liverpool and Man City are still a good bit ahead of them. I know you just said there Arsenal are obviously beating Liverpool, but they're missing players. I do think the signings Chelsea have made are very impressive. I think Thiago Silva would be the pick of them for me. You know, I know, yes, he's 35, but his experience with your, you know, Rudiger, Tomori, Zuma, Christensen will be huge. I know Frank is, you know, toyed a couple of times with the three at the back. So I think putting him in the middle would be, you know, great experience for them. Ben Chilwell will go and he'll solve the left back spot problem he has. Obviously, he's not really played Alonso. He seems to be on his way out. And then I've been very impressed with Ziyech every time he's played for Ajax in the Champions League. So, and then look, Timo Werner has scored goals everywhere he's been. So they are very good signings, but I just think they're trying to bridge that gap to catch City and Liverpool. I still think, you know, they won't get there, especially if City end up getting Messi. But at the same time, it's encouraging for any Chelsea supporter. I think, you know, it's really positive. I think Frank had a very good year last year, obviously finishing the top four. was unlucky in the FA Cup. You know, so it is encouraging times. And look, they had the transfer ban last year. They were desperate to, you know, bring in players. He often did interviews where he said, we need to bolster the squad. And I think he's identified key positions he wants to improve. And then he's slowly but surely clearing out the players he doesn't want. So if I were a Chelsea fan, I would be excited, but I still think they're probably 2-3 seasons away from really challenging for the Premier League.
About a minute and a half, David, to go here on the show. Dean Henderson, a new deal at Man United, a 5-year deal, a 23-year-old. Does that what David De Gea needs? Someone breathing down his neck, because he needs confidence from somewhere.
No, I definitely do think he does. He's been at Manchester United a long time, where he's never really had someone to push him and test him. I don't think Dean Henderson, if you go back this time last year in pre-season, just before he went on loan, I don't think anybody at Manchester United tipped Dean Henderson the following season to be pushing for number one. It just shows that if you have a good loan move and you do really well, then it stands you in good stead. So he's come back. I still think De Gea is ahead of him, even though his confidence seems to be shot since the World Cup. But at this point in time, at least Ollie kind of says, you really need to knuckle down, because I have someone who's ready to go. And, you know, United showing the faith in, you know, Dean Henderson, giving him, you said 5-year, I think it's even a 6-year, which is remarkable. So that shows the faith that Manchester United have in him. And I think he will push De Gea. A lot of Man United fans, I even ran a poll on Twitter, who do they think should start? And a lot did go with Henderson after the season he had last year. But I still think Ollie will go with De Gea. But if you remember the games where he had mistakes, I don't think he'll stay in the team if those problems do happen again.
Well, David, Dan and Johnny, thanks so much for speaking to us this afternoon. Enjoy the chat as always. Enjoy the night, lads.
Thanks, JD.
Good luck, lads.
Football on Off the Ball
with Paddy Power, as obnoxiously passionate about soccer as Frank Lampard after the final whistle. Gamble responsibly. See Dunlewy.net.
That was an OTB Podcast Network presentation.